Welcome to the Family Office Real Estate Institute podcast, where we explore family offices, real estate, and the art of preserving legacies and wealth. I'm DJ Van Kuren, and I'm going to be utilizing my experience of investing on behalf of a number of prominent families and working directly for a number of prominent families on their real estate portfolio. I'm going to tap into my decades worth of experience in real estate investing and relationships with some of the most prominent family office leaders in the industry, academics from universities around the world, and industry experts and leaders in the real estate space. So whether you're a family member, family office executive, family office, or real estate enthusiast, Family Office Real Estate Institute podcast will empower you with knowledge and influential voices. I'm DJ Van Kuren, and this is the Family Office Real Estate Institute podcast.
Thank you for joining us again in another session of Family Office Real Estate Insights. Today, we have Jack Ablin with us, who is with Crescent Partners, frequently on CNBC and Fox Business, as well as author of numerous books. Jack, thanks for being here on the show today.
All right. Thank you, DJ. It's great to be here.
So we were talking a little bit before we got on here about a few things. And, you know, we've had a lot of turmoil on the market in the last year on the real estate side, right? We've seen cap rates that have just started to expand. We've seen interest rates rise. You know, and that affects not only the private markets, but the public markets as well. So what have you been seeing over the last, period of time, and how is that impacting both of those sectors?
Sure. No, it's a great question, because that is it really gives a nice insight into kind of where investors are thinking perhaps private markets will likely go when we track public markets, which of course trade on a minute-to-minute basis. And if you look at, you know, the REITs, so for example, you know, we started looking at REITs at the end of 2021 to see what kind of impact this rate rise has had on that sector. And, you know, whether you're looking at apartment REITs, office REITs, whatever, you've got implied cap rates pushing double digits. In fact, office REITs are probably 12, cap rate at 12 right now. And office REITs are down more than 30%. Compare that to, you know, the marks on partnerships and other ways to evaluate it. And it looks like office, commercial office is down about half that. We believe that the real answer is probably somewhere in between the two, because I think one of the things that private market valuations probably are taking into consideration is anticipated Fed easing and lower rates as we move into the end of 2024 and into 2025. And perhaps the REIT market isn't fully capturing that yet.
So, you know, one of the things I think about when we have market fluctuations on the real estate side, and you talk about, you know, the public REITs, is that, you know, because of that liquidity component, it doesn't necessarily mean that the value is truly reflected in the shares, right?
That's it. Yeah, it doesn't mean the public market's right, for sure. In fact, you're right, you know, and the underlying investment is, you know, pretty stable, long-term, you know, cash flowing. And so absolutely, the public markets will introduce a lot of noise around something that is probably fundamentally, in reasonable shape.
So you've been, you know, in the marketplace for, I think, close to 40 years or something, I think I read. And so you've been through a number of cycles. You know, people have continued to say, oh, especially families, because we'll do the largest family office real estate investing study annually. And people are always worried that, oh, it's coming up. It's coming up. We're having a recession. Now, you know, through my research, it runs on a 18 and a half years. You have the typical cycles, and you can go back 250 years in the U.S., the U.K. and Australia. What do you see as in you know, the next couple of years and what it looks like. From my perspective, I'm like, well, I don't see a downturn or recession on the real estate side, 27, 28, but you've been through a number of these recessions. And where we are today, does that look similar to anywhere in the past that you've been a part of?
Yeah. So in terms of, you know, our economic outlook, I do think that we are going to have some slowing. I think one of the things, you know, maybe it was a crutch, but, you know, companies, businesses have been able to use higher inflation to perhaps some, you know, pass some higher prices along to their customers. But when you strip away, DJ, what you're going to find is that volumes really aren't growing. And now that inflation is rolling over, no longer will companies or other businesses be able to perhaps patch over some of the imbalances using these price increases. And we're starting to see that now. You know, if you look at Home Depot and Lowe's and some of the other retailers, you know, their same store sales are no higher than the year over year inflation rate. And now that inflation is slowing, we're starting to see cost cutting. They need to maintain their margins, and they will likely do it with layoffs and the like. In terms of, you know, longer term assets like private real estate, you know, we always have cycles. And I think one of the things that I've learned along the way is you have to look past the recession and you have to position yourself to sustain through a recession. So what does that mean? It means lower leverage. I wouldn't necessarily squeeze out, you know, every, you know, IRR basis point to be able to have the ability to lower the rent if you have to, you know, refinance if you have to. But the point here is that what we're going to find are there are players that are going to be overlevered. Our players in fundamentally, you know, sectors that are fundamentally flawed, perhaps. And that does create opportunities for long-term investors.
What about on the debt side? Because with real estate, I mean, everybody's made money since 2012, and it's continued to go up. And with what's happened over the last year with rates, you know, the thing that I've been saying is that you're going to really find out who really knew what they were doing and who's seasoned. Because, you know, people were saying, well, let's buy at a 4.5 cap. We're going to interest only 3.25, and then we're going to sell at a 5.5 cap. And now that's not happening, right? And the loan to values and everything else. So there seems to be quite a bit of debt that is going to be coming due over the next year or 2 years. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, absolutely, DJ. I think one of the things that we learned, you know, since 2009, when the Fed deliberately kept interest rates below the rate of inflation, obviously trying to get the inflation rate to come up to that 2% number, but also to be able to get out from under that the financial crisis, was it was very easy to borrow money and do just about anything when rates are artificially too low. And of course, not just equities and other risky investments, but clearly real estate as well. Well, you know, after 14 or 15 years, finally now bonds as an asset class are going to be able to fight stocks with both arms, right? Without one arm tied behind its back. And so we're starting to see a rebalance, right? The equity market had that reset back in 2022. It was down around 18% or so. The bond market was down around 13 or 14%. And we're starting to now see that debt as an asset class deserves a place at the asset allocation table, which it really hasn't for the last 20 years. So I think as more and more private investors start to reconcile, and the banks too, have to reconcile with this new alternative, our view is, at least in the real estate space, I think there are better opportunities right now on the debt side than there is on the equity side.
Yeah, it's you know, a number of years back, a lot of families started moving into the debt, and obviously you have that additional security if you're in first position from that perspective. But there's also going to be an opportunity to buy assets where you're buying the debt, right? for that real estate and actually some good quality real estate that might already have been through that development process or you know, a value add process, et cetera. And so are you guys taking a look at allocating some of that or having your clients move into some of this type of debt?
Yeah, so we're looking at various real estate debt offerings, from just simple high quality, you know, mortgage replacement to all the way down, you know, to equity supplement. Think about, you know, the relationship between the GP and the LP, and they come back to refinance and the bank says, well, you know what, great property, but we've now tightened our lending standards. We have a higher interest rate and we're requiring a lower loan to value. So, you know, what does that mean? It means that the GP has to go back to the LP and say, hey, guys, we need to pony up more equity. And the LP may not want to do that, right? The LPs may just say, look, we're tired of doing this. You know, you're on your own. And so perhaps, you know, lenders that we associate with could perhaps step in and provide that, what we'll call that gap financing, that, you know, either mezzanine or equity substitute financing.
Yeah, that, in fact, I was just having this conversation yesterday with another multifamily office where they're having to go back for capital calls and to explain what's going on. Of course, majority of those people, families haven't experienced this, right? To have to come back because it's just been all rosy and everything else. So how are you looking at, from a tax perspective, for the families? Is there any certain strategies that you guys look at? I mean, one of the conversations is that, you know, with the change and the decrease in what you can gift over your period of time, you know, for a family, it's obviously continuing to come down.
Yeah, that's right. So the tax environment is not only challenging, but we believe it's going to get more challenging in the future. If you look at, you know, our debt to GDP and what we're paying now for interest expense, it's starting to crowd out other discretionary spending. And we think ultimately we have to expect higher tax rates down the line. What does that mean? We're certainly focused on tax efficient investing like real estate, like royalties. The other thing we're doing is pretty aggressive tax loss harvesting, where we'll take a portfolio and go 30% short and offset with a 30% long position. And now, no matter which way the market goes, we have a reservoir from which to take losses to offset against the underlying position. The other thing we're big believers in and a huge market in is private placement life insurance. Here's a way for a family to take assets, put it into their own quote unquote life insurance policy, have a massive death benefit, and then actually all of the investment activity inside the policy accumulates tax-free, and they can get liquidity from policy loans along the way. But then these assets, as a death benefit, transfers to the next generation.
And are families open to that? I mean, that's been a conversation for quite some time. It seems like there's been an educational process over the years.
You're right, DJ. It's always an educational process. We've got some really talented colleagues on staff who know all of, you know, we have an attorney and then also a former PPLI broker who is now just acting as a consultant with us, client consultant, he's an employee. Guiding clients through the PPLI process. And I think the other thing is, because of a lot of the scale and some of the technology, no longer do you need to commit, you know, 20, 30 million to a dedicated insurance policy. A lot of these PPLI programs can be done on a much smaller scale.
Mm. All right, so let me switch over for a second from another tax type play. You know, opportunity zones. I know you guys took a big step into the opportunity zone areas when they started. You know, what we found from our reports and talking to various families is that only about, I think, 25-30% maybe of families were going into opportunity zones. Initially, it was because the regs weren't complete, right? And so they're waiting to see what happens. But then there's also been, and it's continued to be, a sort of a an understanding of really what is the opportunity zone, how does it work, things like that. So you guys took quite a big leap in there and have done quite well. How would you say what's become of the success and what has been your position on these opportunity zones?
Yeah, we're huge believers in the opportunity zone. You're right. We really started putting together our fund as we started to see these regs come together in 2018. And we're now on our third vehicle. But, you know, we looked at it and we were like pinching ourselves. Is this really true? You can take your capital gain, roll it into an opportunity zone, and then essentially, you know, with refis, pay the capital gain tax, and then transfer all of this property to your heirs and virtually tax-free. Mm-hmm. It was just a remarkable set of circumstances that we felt as a first mover gave us, you know, real opportunities to find parcels that we think had the best chance for success. So for us, it's been really a way for us to make our mark in development real estate. We're working with, as you know, GJ, the most preeminent, you know, contractors, builders in the country, like Hines, Lennar. And so we're building Class A properties, and it's working out. So we still have, you know, time is kind of running out. As you go through time, the attractiveness of Opportunity Zone investing has kind of diminished a little because the tax, the ultimate capital gain tax is due 2027. And so there isn't a ton of time to, you know, put a shovel in the ground and have something to refinance by then. But we still think that it is an attractive place for those who have taken a capital gain.
So last question for you here. So where are you, what are you talking to your clients currently about or telling them based upon real estate, their allocations to real estate? Are you saying hold tight, increase, decrease, wait, we have opportunities coming? What are you guys doing at Crescent in relation to that type of strategy?
Sure. So, you know, I would say we're still optimistic. We actually still have a program. We started in 2020 or 21, where we're literally building industrial properties, you know, warehouses, distribution centers, fulfillment centers, spec, in secondary port cities. So we still are very bullish on industrial just because of this reshoring. And we're seeing, you know, not just global trade coming down, but now the perils of global trade, if you have a ship going through the Red Sea, is just underscoring how perhaps, you know, creating a product here at home is put at a premium. Of course, then we've got a lot of legislation like the CHIPS Act and other rebuilding that encourage that. So industrial real estate, great. We also like hotels. We think the hotel boom has been remarkable, seeing room rates rise as much as they have, as Americans are looking for more experiences. And yet the supply of new construction hotels is pretty much non-existent. Largely because of the lockdowns and pandemic. And so we think that the fundamentals in hospitality space is still very strong.
Yeah, and we've been over at Evergreen, we've been working with a prominent family just like you guys in that space and since COVID. So Jack, thanks so much for being on. We appreciate it. Jack Avalon with Crescent Capital. Frequently writing, you have articles that come out on a weekly basis, I think people can sign up for.
Yeah.
Also, you know, take a look and if you turn on the TV, you'll see you occasionally as well, right?
All right, thank you. Yeah, crescentcapital.com. Look, sign up for the research. And I love the research that you guys write. So keep up the good work, DJ. Thank you.
All right, thanks, Jack.